call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It's Hour 3 rolling along this morning. Good Wednesday to you. We got Jared Dubin joining us. We'll talk some NBA with him. There's a lot of stories going on in the NBA. Tonight, Kevin Durant ready to make his Phoenix Suns debut. He's been out since early January with an MCL injury, but he's ready to go to help this team, a loaded Phoenix Suns team, take over the Western Conference. Well, they hope to do so against a Denver Nuggets team with a two-time MVP in Nikola Jokic, Ja Morant of the Memphis Grizzlies. You've got Dallas trying to figure things out. It's not working now, but maybe they'll figure it out with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. And then there is some other storylines about, you know, does Golden State have that playoff switch? Do they flip it? They're about a 500 team now, and they've been that way pretty much the entire season. Lots of ups, lots of downs. But when they get into the playoffs, are they going to be threatening? But on the outside, looking into the Lakers. Now, if you watch Sunday night's game against Dallas, LeBron James limping in Dallas against the Mavericks, and it didn't look good, and he suffered a foot injury, and now he's going to be out for a couple of weeks. Now, do the Lakers have a huge hill to climb to get into the playoffs? Well, no, it actually isn't. Because to get into the top 10, which with the 7, 8, 9, and 10 would put you in the playoff game, they're only 2.5 games behind Dallas for the 7th spot. If they now want to get into the 6th spot, they are 3 games back of the LA Clippers, right? So there's a lot of teams in between where the Clippers are at 6 and where the Lakers are at 12, but they're only separated by 3 games. But when you don't have LeBron James and you were building some momentum since the trade deadline, and you were building some momentum, this is a huge blow because LeBron is not likely to be back in any time to get you a real solid run. He's gonna be out for a number of weeks. So it puts you, let's say it's 3. Well, it puts you at the end of March with only about 2 weeks or so left in the regular season, 2 weeks plus of the regular season. So now what do you got to do? Well, you've got to count on Anthony Davis. And you basically need Anthony Davis to take your team to where it needs to go. And then when LeBron comes back, then you see where you're at. But in order to get in, you're going to need somebody to carry it. Now, remember when LeBron James scored that point against, I forgot who it was against, but it didn't matter. He was playing and then he scored the points that put him past Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And Anthony Davis didn't look very celebratory. Well, it was because they were losing a game. And Anthony Davis was sort of reacting, not to the moment, but to the fact that they were still trailing in the game. Like, there was just this competitiveness in him that allowed him to go, you know, I'm not even really sure. I think it was against Oklahoma City. So Oklahoma City is one of the teams that's, like, you know, in the playoff bubble. So you're fighting a team that you should be beating in order to get within that bubble. And so Davis was kind of, you know, kind of upset. He couldn't even enjoy the singular moment because the largeness of the moment was that the team was losing. And they did. They went on to lose to the Thunder. But right now they've won 3 of their last 4 games. But that win against Dallas came at the cost of losing LeBron James. If Anthony Davis can step up and keep this momentum going, it'll really say a lot about where he is as a player. Because we've always kind of looked at Anthony Davis as a star, but we've also looked at Anthony Davis as a guy that doesn't really take a team on his back and carry him. He's had, you know, was it from New Orleans to Los Angeles. When he got to Los Angeles is because LeBron James needed a second guy. Anthony Davis was not going to be the first guy. Well, for the next couple of weeks, he's going to have to be the first guy. Is it impossible? No, because again, all these teams are playing around with the same record. So it's not impossible. It's not a daunting task. I mean, look, it's not the Western Conference of old where, you know, you got to win 50 games to be even considered for the playoffs. You're looking at a Western Conference where, you know, Utah, New Orleans are okay. Minnesota, okay. Like, that's what you're going up against. You got to beat Portland. Again, who's below 500 like you are. So as much as you have issues, they have issues. But you need somebody to step up, and it's got to be Anthony Davis. I'm really interested in Kevin Durant's coming back and playing for Phoenix. He's saying all the right things, right? Loves being there. Feel like he's going to get a rebirth. That could be very, very dangerous. A team that's right now being led by DeAndre Ayton and a number of other stars. This could be very dangerous. We shall see. He did say, listen, I'm going to miss playing with Kyrie. That was kind of the reason why I wanted him to come to Brooklyn. But there's going to be an enthusiasm by Kevin Durant to be part of a team that's not, you know, when he was with Brooklyn, they were in the playoffs. They were in the playoff battle. But I think when you're looking to see if you can get that title, right, with sort of shed the, man, you only joined Golden State to get a couple of rings. You didn't choose to go to Phoenix. They picked you. They traded for you. Win a title, and you sort of escape that a little bit. I'm interested to see where this is going. The NBA's got, I mean, there's a lot of things going on in this league right now. Really, really a lot. The Knicks are on a roll. The Knicks are cruising. I just don't see anybody other than the top three in the Eastern Conference. I just don't.
No, that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, I just...
Which is how it feels it's been for, like, the last couple of years.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's been, like, before LeBron went to the Lakers, it was LeBron, but there would always be one or two teams that you'd be like, all right, maybe they...
Keep your eye on.
Then after he left, it was pretty much Milwaukee, right, Boston, you know, Philadelphia. But the Knicks are playing pretty good, but I don't see them going, I don't see anybody else behind them. I mean, I just don't. I mean, I'm not sold on Cleveland. I know people are like, they're writing blogs about how good Cleveland is, and I agree that Donovan Mitchell being on the Cavaliers makes them fantastic. But I'm not going to, in a seven-game series against Milwaukee, no. Against Boston, no. No, I don't see him winning a seven-game series against any of those teams that are in the top three. But, I could see a whole mess of fun in the Western Conference. I mean, like, I'm telling you, like, if you are the Nuggets, right, would you want to play a healthy LeBron James in round one and a Lakers team that figured it out? I don't know. That can be a little daunting. Now, Dallas is interesting because the big concern about Dallas when they traded for Kyrie and giving up the two players that they did, Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, was you just lost two good defensive players. And defense is important in the playoffs. You're not going to win games every single night in the postseason, you know, 135 to 131. But they are not a good defensive team. You would know that, but it's surprisingly how bad those two are playing off of each other. Doesn't mean, again, that Jason Kidd can't figure out how to make it fit. And they may need more seasoning and more time. You are throwing in a major ingredient at the last minute of the recipe. But I would be really concerned in Dallas if this is going to work out. You gave up a lot for him, and it doesn't look like it's popping as a star power-ish thing. Clippers, dangerous with Kawhi when he's on the court. When he's on the court, they win. When he's off the court, he doesn't. They're load managing him, so you're going to get a back-and-forth season of around 500. But in the postseason, when he's going to play every night, watch out for the Clippers. But Golden State is really coming along. They've won three straight. They've won six of their last 10. Golden State is one of those teams that I don't know what to make of them. How can you play 82 games of 500 basketball? And even if you have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, you've never shown one time during the season that you're a team to beat, and then you're supposed to turn it on in the playoffs? Like, I don't know if that works all the time. I don't think you can play below 500 basketball or 500 basketball or just a little above 500 basketball. Like, whatever you are at any moment of the season, and then go, don't worry, we'll roll through everybody in the playoffs? Like, I don't know if that works. You got tremendous talent, we know that. They've definitely got a playoff coach who knows how to handle the rigors of a postseason and the consistency of a postseason. I've said this many times, that the one thing about postseason in sports, especially in the NBA, not so much in baseball because you're going up against a different pitcher, but you can have a series. The right coaches in a series can see game one and go, all right, we're going to do this, but I also anticipate them seeing the same thing I'm seeing and thinking I'm going to do this and this, so we're going to do this and this instead. You can make a lot of different adjustments, but it's like that chess match of knowing where your opponent is going to go. So, and Steve Kerr is really smart about that. Yes, he's got a loaded team. Yes, they're super talented, but Kerr's always been very smart about anticipating what changes the other team is going to make, especially defensively, even if they come off a win, even if that opponent is coming off a win. Kerr's been pretty smart of going, I know what they're going to do based on what I'm seeing, because this is what I would do, and I think Joe Smith, the other coach, is going to do those things. But still, I can't imagine picking Golden State as a favorite to win the West just because. Like, the Nuggets are a really solid basketball team. And that's not a fluke. That team is really good at home in that altitude. And they are really putting the pieces around Nikola Jokic that have been long desired in that city. So I don't know. But there's a lot of open questions here in the NBA. I'm looking forward to talking to Jared about it, because this is the stretch run now. You know, you and I were kind of joking. It's true. The NBA doesn't really kick off until Christmas.
Yeah.
But this is the time, too, when you start looking at like a month and a half left in the season, of some desperation, and now teams are going to start making a little push.
Well, that's what you're starting to – that's what the trades was for, too, right? Yeah. I mean, you saw all these – I mean, it's just weird trades.
Really weird trades. I mean, like
– I mean, like the Nets are done.
Huh?
The Nets are done.
The Nets, yeah. And the Nets, because they had failed Kyrie experiment and Kevin Durant on the team at some point, this built up enough to be in the playoff picture, right? They were like, I think when they made the trades, they were a 4 seed and knew that it's still not working. We're not holding off. Or a 5 seed. I should say 5 seed. And then just went, we're done. Yeah. Falling backwards. While Miami tries to get back out of that bubble, Atlanta tries to get out of that play-in game. But you're right. The Eastern Conference is a team in the playoff picture right now that no one will buy as a team to win that East. At all. All right, we'll continue. I want to talk about the pitch clock again. I thought it was pretty fascinating. Let's get more into details of what's going on in Major League Baseball this spring training.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. All right, so good, the bad, the dumb. You brought up a really good one, which is the good, is that the pitch clock in Major League Baseball is working, at least spring training-wise. Games are much, much shorter.
And I'm glad I'm not alone in this right now.
Yeah, exactly. We've had a number of Grapefruit League and Cactus League games now. It started Friday, I think, was like they had like a couple of games that were on the schedule, and then a full load schedule on Saturday. So four or five of them. And so that's not a huge sample size. So like nobody can really read into the details now. But the average game, spring training game, and take that for what you are, what it is, because it's a baseball game, but you know, you're changing the different batters all the time and a lot of pitching changes and whatnot. But the average spring training game so far, first half week that it's been implemented, 2 hours and 39 minutes. That's nearly 20 minutes off the games that were played through a similar set last year in spring training. Now, look, it's very important to get the context right. Spring training baseball is where you get loosened up, where you get some kinks out, all of those kind of things. Like, you are basically warming up for the season. So it takes a little bit, all right, the pitching isn't as sharp, the hitting isn't as sharp. Everybody's kind of getting back into the groove of things. So you can anticipate that games not at its full competitive status are going to take a little bit, right? Pitchers are going to miss with the zone, so it's going to take a few more pitches. Batters are going to swing at some bad pitches, so maybe maybe get some quick outs, maybe get some long outs, but everybody's sort of getting into the groove of things. But what they did not compare it to all of spring training. They said, look, in the first four games of spring training last year, here's the average. First four games of spring training this year, here's the average, and it's 20 minutes. Let me make this point. That is a huge difference. That is a huge difference. It may not seem like much because you can do a lot in 20 minutes, but my God, you would want to know if you were Major League Baseball, if that just popped up, right, without any significant rule change, and that just popped up, you would go, why? Why is that? Why are our games all across two areas of the country with 30 baseball teams? Why is it a 20 minutes difference between the time of game? What is it? Well, they don't have to ask that question because they know. They are trying to speed up the game with the pitch clock. Now, I'm with you, Ron, when you said that you might be in the minority here. Baseball holds on to its traditions better than any sport that's out there. The NFL changes things all the time. People get a little upset, but in the end, you sort of accepted that there will be rule changes. There will be things the NFL will do differently. When baseball does anything, there is a cry from its base, right, that feels like it has to be heard. It's almost like they're protecting something sacred.
Yeah.
Right? And
it's funny because I always get the feeling they want the game to grow, but not change.
Yeah, they don't know. And they don't know what to do.
Yeah, and the only way for the game to grow is to change.
Right. Exactly. Look, we were just talking about my wife and I went to Disneyland. We were talking about that guy that went to Disney World. That guy that went to Disneyland.
Yeah.
Disney that theme park faces this all the time, right? There's a ride. It's from some cartoon in the 40s, 50s.
Well, nobody's. Why don't we name the ride Splash Mountain?
Splash Mountain, right? Exactly.
Because that's the hot controversial
ride
right now.
That's the hot controversial one, right? When back in Disney World, I know they still have it at Disneyland, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
Yep, that's still there.
They changed that to Winnie the Pooh at Disney World.
Oh, right? That's nice.
People went nuts. People go crazy. They like the thing that they're familiar with. They like their thing. Even though the company is like, look, we got a whole new generation to try to attract here. We are trying to appease to a whole new group. We love you, loyal fan, but we got to open this up a little bit more.
Yeah.
We got to expand. We got some IPs here we got to add. Baseball is in that similar boat. They want to look at their fan base that always goes to games, keeps the box score, watches until late at night in July, and they go, we love you. We always loved you. We always loved you. But holy cow, are we losing people? We can't be old-fashioned. Right? We can't have Bryce Harper looking in the camera and telling his kids, make sure you drink your Ovaltine every single morning. Like, we're not doing those things anymore. Right? Eat your Wheaties for a good solid breakfast. Like, those days are, we have got to get young people interested in this game.
Yeah.
And the old people are like, but you forget, it's a timeless game. It doesn't have a clock.
And honestly, yeah, what young people want now is gratification, instant gratification, instant satisfaction.
They do.
They're used to being on their devices now where they can jump in and just, you know, instantly win this or, you know, find this or find that. And I think a baseball game traditionally, if a pitcher is taking 2 minutes to throw one pitch, that's a problem.
That's a problem. That is a problem. Because if you go to a baseball game as a young person, and you find yourself sitting there and all you're doing is looking at your phone because you're bored, you won't go again and you won't be interested in whatever they're selling. You're losing that audience. But if you give them something that's constant and moving, I'm telling you, I know people are going to think I'm crazy. I'm telling you, I think it's one of the reasons Major League Soccer is growing like it has. It's gone gangbusters.
Yes.
I honest to God, there is you. If you give people just something to do, right, something to watch, and they watch it, they're more likely to enjoy it than if you give them nothing but maybe a more traditional sport. You get a young person to a soccer game, and the ball is always being kicked, and there's hardly any dead time, even if there's no goals, even if the final score is 1-0, you've given them something to interact with. You've given them something to watch. If you give them a pitch and then 2 minutes later, another pitch, they're going to go, wait, there's all this time. What am I watching? A guy walking around a mound, a guy playing around with his glove for 20 minutes. Like, what am I watching here? All right, here's my phone. I'll go to TikTok or whatever. I'm going to Snapchat. I got to do something. And so Rob Manfred is, again, in a position where he's like, I'm sorry, traditionalists. I'm sorry, people that think that baseball's timelessness is its highest quality, not in 2023. Now, we can lament that, right? We can say, oh, these kids have to be constantly stimulated. I get it. That's a larger argument in what our culture has done with that sort of with the technology. But that's not an argument for this. Like, Rob Manfred has nothing to do with that. He's not going to convince a bunch of teenagers to get off TikTok to watch a baseball game. So what is he doing? What has he got to do? He's got to play into what makes them want to go to their phones in the first place. Well, at least it's something. And that's what he's doing.
Listen, I mean, already, I think we're talking about baseball more this spring training than we ever have before.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
Positive, negative, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, it was always, you know, you talked about your favorite team. You know, I almost included Gavin Lux in the bad, but that's, you know, that's me. I felt that was bad.
Sure.
You know, you may not think that's bad. I think it's terrible. But, you know, but it's, you know, because baseball still is very regional. I think these subtle little changes. Now, I'm not a fan of the big base. I'm not. I think that's stupid. I'm not a fan of the ghost runner in the 10th inning.
Yeah, I'm with you.
If you want to do the ghost runner, then maybe do like two or three extra innings traditional. And then, you know, the 14th inning, go ahead and add the ghost runner.
You don't have to do it immediately. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to change the – you don't
play
have to change
it out a little bit.
Play it out a little bit. Let's see if we can get a game over in 10, 11 innings. And
yeah.
Then finally go, okay, we're not. Now we're going to do this.
But this pitch clock thing, and I know it was controversial, and I you know, and it's probably up there with robot umpires. I'm fine not using robot umpires yet. Eventually, I think we will get there. But the pitch clock, I don't see the negative – I'm really not seeing the negativity to it.
Right, I don't either. I don't. And if you again, if you were to sit a reasonable baseball pitcher, let's say there was like a pitcher like Max Scherzer loves it. Like he's like I've been around the league a long time, but I like this. He thinks it gives him an advantage.
Yeah,
he thinks has the advantage when he controls the pace. Right.
Yep.
He's not waiting for the batter. He's like it is built for me to control the pace, not the batter to control the pace. Right. Now, granted, they always kind of did, but if you're ready to pitch and the batter's not ready to hit, you can't pitch. But what he's saying is, I am in a position within a reasonable amount of time, I should be able to control the entire at-bat. So he loves it. But let's say you had a pitcher that's like, no, I like taking my time. I like. If you really explain to him the larger point of this, you might win him over. Saying, look, I know you didn't like it, but this has to be done. Like, I'm sure in the NBA, there were coaches that were like, shot clock? No, four-corner offense is the way this league should be.
Right.
Games should be 37 to 35, and we should have the ball for 3 minutes on every possession, just passing it back and forth. But you have to go, no, that's not this, man. That is not this. We can't do it. So I'm with you. I think the pitch clock is starting to show its form. It's starting to show something really potential, and I'm looking forward to seeing it play out in the regular season as to where it's going. All right, we'll continue. Jared Dubin next. Talk NBA as we continue on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Jared Dubin joining us from 538, covers the NBA, Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today. Find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. All right, tonight Kevin Durant expected to make his debut with the Phoenix Suns. All right, he's coming off an MCL injury and it hasn't been played since early January. But the big picture with Phoenix, what do you think he can add to this team, and how do you project what this will look like down the road towards the postseason?
Well, the big thing with KD is he's probably the most easy-to-fit superstar on basically any
right.
team. That's why he's been able to seamlessly fit, you know, playing with guys with skill sets as diverse as, you know, Russell Westbrook and Stephen Curry and Kyrie Irving. And he'll fit, you know, right in with Devin Booker and Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton because of the way his combination of size and shooting and creation ability and even rim protection and perimeter defense makes him basically able to fit with pretty much anybody but that you put him on the court with. And what it's going to do for the Suns is sort of guarantee that they always have a high-level offensive creator on the floor pretty much at all times. Over the last few years, even though they've been really, really good, the offense has dropped off a little bit when Chris Paul has played without Devin Booker. Now you can have KD on the floor in those minutes, and you'll basically always have a player who has guaranteed you an elite offense on the court at all times. And that's something that, especially in the playoffs, when you got to sit guys, but you don't want to sit them for too long, and you don't want your team to get crushed during those minutes when they're out, it's huge to be able to have that at all times.
the Western Conference is so loaded with stories. Let's get to Dallas. What is not working for the Mavericks right now? Do you think it could work? They don't seem to be winning a ton of games with that pairing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is they don't have a ton of depth after trading, obviously, a bunch of guys. They don't have a ton of defense, especially on the wing, which is something that, you know, you really need these days, especially in the West where they do have those, you know, peak wing creators. You got to have guys that can guard those players. I mean, blowing big leads and stuff like that is not something that's going to happen all the time. You wouldn't expect them to blow a 27-point lead in, like, 20% of their games together. But I do think there are some roster construction issues there just with the lack of defense and with the lack of sort of wing players other than Luka Doncic that are, you know, high-level two-way players.
The Denver Nuggets, they've been waiting a while to get healthy. They've been waiting a while to get some pieces around Nikola Jokic. What is working for the Nuggets now that didn't work when Jokic was winning MVP awards?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's working that wasn't working then is they have their guys back. You know, last year, you know, they're starting guys like Austin Rivers in the playoffs and, you know, Will Barton, who fell out of the rotation for the Wizards this year and was just waived and got picked up by the Raptors. He was playing, you know, 30-plus minutes a night for Denver over the last few years. Now they have, you know, Jamal Murray back. They have Michael Porter Jr. back. They picked up Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope this offseason, and they just had the ability to sort of shape-shift themselves, play big, play small, play lineups with more defense, more shooting. They're just much more versatile of a team this year, and they have so many more threats around a guy whose best skill is probably the way he's able to amplify other players' skills.
Golden State, I know where people are with this, right? They see a team that's like, all right, when they get to the playoffs, we'll see a different Golden State. Do you buy that? This has been a 500 team pretty much since day one of this season. Do you buy that there's that switch? Are they a threatening team in a seven-game series in the West the way they are right now?
I mean, not if they have to come through the play-in, I don't think. Like, a lot of people like to talk about, you know, which play-in teams are the biggest threat and can any of them make a run. I think we need to reckon with the fact that play-in teams are 0-12 in playoff series
so far.
Because most of the time, those teams are just not as good as the top teams in the conference. And if you got to go on the road and play against a 1 or 2 seed, you probably don't have all that good of a chance to win. You know, if they can stay out of the play-in somehow and they can get themselves a good matchup, then yeah, they can win a series, maybe win a couple of series. They have the guys, obviously, who can do it and have done it at an extremely high level. But like you said, they've been a 500 team for most of the season, and that's because any time that they don't have all five of their starters on the floor, they just haven't been very good. In the minutes that they've been able to play Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, and Looney, they've crushed everybody. But in all the other minutes, they just haven't been a very good team, and that's a pretty big problem when you only have one lineup that can be successful.
If you look at the Eastern Conference and you see how great Milwaukee has been playing now that Chris Middleton is back and Boston has been on the top of that conference from the beginning, Philadelphia with Joel Embiid and James Harden, can you add Cleveland to that mix, or is there a difference between those three teams and where the Cavaliers are?
I think there's a difference between the top two teams and the rest of the teams. To me, Boston and Milwaukee are pretty clearly, you know, the class of that conference and have been so throughout the entire season. Obviously, Philly had gone on a little bit of a run and played much better. But I'm at the point where I need to see it from them before I'm ready to put them in the conversation with those two other teams. Especially, you know, when they play against Boston, it just hasn't gone particularly well for them over the last several years. And that's something where, you know, sometimes one team just has another's number. You know, we see it like when Denver and the Clippers play. Denver just has that team's number. You know, we've seen it with other teams over the years in different matchups. I got to see the Sixers actually beat one of those teams before I'm ready to put them in the same conversation.
When we talk about LeBron James and the Lakers, and this was before the injury, when people were buzzing about it, it almost felt like a LeBron-centric thing, right? Can LeBron do this? Can LeBron get the Lakers to the playoffs without looking at the rest of the Lakers? But now how much of this is on Anthony Davis now to for him to say, all right, if we're going to be in this play-in tournament, I'm going to be the one that's going to have to get us there until LeBron comes back.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be Anthony Davis, and it's going to have to be a little bit of all the other guys that they just traded for and sort of remade their rotation. I would say I'm highly skeptical of them being able to do that without LeBron. Even before LeBron got hurt, I was somewhat skeptical of their ability to do all that much of anything. Like I said, the play-in teams just generally are not nearly as good as the better teams. And even if you remake a lot of your roster at the trade deadline, it's still really difficult to find the right mix and to play at a high enough level to be able to deal with those better teams. Not to mention, like, you also have to make it through the play-in to get to the playoffs in the first place. And that's, you know, not necessarily an easy thing to do. You know, we saw the Warriors a couple of years ago didn't make it out of a play-in when, you know, people thought that they were going to go into the playoffs, and they lost to the Lakers and then they lost to the Grizzlies.
How threatening are the Clippers? When Kawhi plays, they win. When he doesn't, they don't. But I know they're monitoring him. But give me an idea of the Clippers as we head to the stretch run.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same conversation we've had about the Clippers, I think, over the last few years. If they're healthy, they're a big threat because they have two guys who are high-level creators, and they have, you know, a bunch of different ways they can play because of how deep and versatile their roster is. But can you really count on them to be healthy, not just when we get to the playoffs, but for an extended period during the playoffs? We saw even a couple of years ago, they got to the playoffs healthy, but then Kawhi got hurt, and he wound up sitting, obviously, all of last season. It's just the it's healthy conversation about the Clippers is not something we can take for granted. Like, it's never when they get healthy. It's if they are healthy and if they can stay healthy. And neither of those things seems particularly likely given their history.
I want to ask you a big picture question, if you don't mind, and it's about this play-in tournament. I was a little skeptical about it because I'm like, look, if you, the more you expand a postseason, it dilutes a little bit. I'm not a traditionalist. I'm into ideas, but this one didn't fit right. But then I start looking at it and I go, wait a minute. You know, I know Phoenix is different. I get it now with Kevin Durant, but there's like four games separating them from like Oklahoma City. Like, is that a good thing? I mean, though, you have so many teams, they're all around 500, all around mediocrity, but they're all vying for some spots here.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're going to have different situations in different years. Sometimes you're going to have what we have this year in the West, and other times you're going to have, you know, two teams in seventh and eighth that are, you know, four or five games ahead of the teams in eighth and ninth. And it's going to be like, why are we even doing this play-in tournament?
Yeah,
you know, it's going to go different ways in different seasons. Just like, you know, sometimes there's a team that wins their conference by 10 games, and sometimes two teams duking it out for the number one spot in the playoffs throughout the entire season. We're going to see the same thing at that, you know, bottom portion of the playoff standings. And this year, I think we happen to be fortunate in the West that we've got, you know, as many as like nine teams fighting for, you know, four spots in the playoffs, basically.
So in a sense, I think it is working. Like, it may not be traditionally something, but I do think that if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan and you are still in the conversation, at least making some postseason appearance, it's not a bad thing to be going that down the list and saying, look, of the Western Conference, only two are really out of it.
Yeah, and like, look, the Thunder, even if they don't make the playoffs this year, being in a playoff push is the kind of thing that could help them a little bit in the future. I think we saw it a couple of years ago where, you know, the Suns had that run in the bubble and, you know, they didn't wind up making the playoffs, but it sort of helped propel them forward and gave them the idea like, hey, you know, we're pretty close to being a good team. And then they traded for Chris Paul. We saw the Grizzlies a couple of years ago, you know, made a run and got themselves through the playoffs, through the play-in and into the playoffs. And then the last couple of years, they've been a much better team. It's the kind of thing where it can sort of propel your team forward over the next few years.
Jared Dubin, again, 538 covering the NBA. Always good having you on, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Good Wednesday to you as we roll along.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Jared Dubin joining us to talk some NBA. There's a breaking story that is occurring. Jalen Carter, who is a former star at the University of Georgia, considered one of the top draft picks coming into April's draft. He's in the combine in Indianapolis, defensive tackle for Georgia. There is an arrest warrant out for him for his alleged involvement in a fatal crash that involved a teammate. You might remember this story. This happened in mid-January, and it happened like within a few days of them winning the national championship. Do you remember this story that there was a recruiting a woman who worked in the recruiting office.
Yeah.
And then there was a player.
Like a few days after, right?
It's a few days after.
Like not even a week. I don't even think it was a full week.
Exactly. They had just celebrated the championship on the campus. Remember this? And then later on that night, there was a report. Well, everybody woke up the next morning. It was over a weekend that this young man, Devin Willock, and Chandler LaCroix, who worked in the recruiting office, a young woman, were killed at like 2 in the morning, like 2:30 in the morning, in a single vehicle accident. It was so tragic. It was so sad. And nobody really knew the details of how they died. There was just this, oh my God, so sad, what happened? I guess they hit a pole and, you know, whatnot. But now an investigation into the crash have shown that the speed and sort of basically people who saw what was going on, that it was similar to racing, and Jalen Carter is alleged to be in the other car. So LaCroix was the driver of one car, Jalen Carter was the driver of another car. It's all alleged, right? So there's an arrest warrant out that they basically were aggressively driving and racing, weaving lanes and just basically racing their cars at 2 in the morning. And it resulted in an accident that killed two individuals at this report. Carter is in Indianapolis for this. I'll just read off the AP wire. Carter is in Indianapolis for the NFL scouting combine. He's been slated to speak to reporters as part of a previously scheduled media availability, but a league spokesman later told reporters that Carter would not be speaking today because he and 5 other players are still conducting physicals. But this is going to be interesting to see this play out. This is all alleged. This is just enough of the investigation to warrant the arrest warrants. But a police investigators had determined that alcohol impairment, racing, reckless driving, and speed were significant and contributing factors to the crash. A toxicology report indicated that LaCroix's blood alcohol concentration was 1.97, more than twice the legal limit in Georgia at the time of the crash. We're close to 2 months later from that incident, and now we've got a report that Jalen Carter, again, one of the top picks in the draft. He's one of the top guys to come in. He is in Indianapolis, and there's an arrest warrant. That's really sad. That's really, really sad. But again, it's alleged. We won't know the full details until there's an actual court, but the reality of it is that this is going to be affecting the way his teams are going to view him. Very similar to Lyle Collins, but Lyle Collins wasn't arrested. Lyle Collins was just questioned, and he draft stock plummeted. Like, nobody wanted to pick up the phone call and call the Baton Rouge Police Department to see exactly what they were thinking. The NFL's that powerful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, if you were a team wanting to draft Lyle Collins back
you would
then,
think,
could you have
right?
picked up the phone and go, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah with the New Orleans Saints, like, or whatever. New Orleans, can we talk?
Well, why wouldn't the owner just pick up the phone?
Yeah, listen, I know you probably couldn't do this to everybody, but we're about ready to make this kid a pick, but... Tell us no, we just wanted to ask him another question. We don't think he's a suspect or anything. He wasn't even around. Oh, okay, great, thanks.
I know, but it said they just let, I guess maybe are they all waiting for Schefter to come forward with it?
Exactly.
No, it's not really an arrest. They just wanted to question him.
If he's tried and found guilty of this, he's going to jail.
Yeah.
Jalen Carter, he's going to jail. That's serious.
I mean, even if it's involuntary manslaughter, it may not be. He's not going to go forever.
No, it's not murder.
But it's enough for what to ruin his career, possibly.
Yeah. It's got to be. I don't know.
That'll be interesting because it's not going to be immediate. For a fact that the court case will be postponed until summertime.
Right.
Do you still take a chance and draft him?
That's right. Exactly. Do you do that? So I don't know, man. That's kind of sad news. Anyway, that's breaking. There'll be more details coming up as we pop. There are some conference basketball tournaments going on this week. Some of the good ones. There's a couple of ones that are like SoCon, Sun Belt, if you're interested in those kind of the mid-major ones. Look, I know these aren't the most exciting ones because like the ACC tournament is in Greensboro and Big Ten in Indianapolis and Big 12 has got all these ranked teams. And that's all next week. But if you are interested in a setting, in an environment where one team is going and everybody else isn't going, then these are your these are the tournaments you should be interested in. This all or nothing thing is actually pretty fun. It's kind of unfair because you could have a rip roaringly good season, but go absolutely nowhere, right? Like be like, hey man, I won 27 games in the Big South, but if you lose the conference tournament, you're not. It's unfortunate, but you're likely to go no place. But if you're looking for a tournament where the big prize is an absolute trip to a tournament that just can make or break your college experience. Like, we talk about this with St. Peter's, right? St. Peter's, they had an experience last year that'll last the rest of their lives. The rest of their lives. They were the darling in the NCAA tournament. Now, that doesn't happen to everybody, right? Very, very rarely do any of these schools ever make a splash on the scene. Like, you get a Florida Gulf Coast, that's awesome. You know, St. Peter's, that's fun. But very rarely do schools out of these conferences actually make some noise.
I don't know, Tony. We're starting to see it more and more now.
But you get a fighting chance, and you get hot, and that three-pointer just keeps falling every time you shoot it. You are in a position to do that.
And that's the fun thing. I mean, this literally is equal footing.
Yeah, right.
I mean, because if – I don't know. I kind of look at football differently than basketball. That if you have just the top talent, you're going to win the game.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But in basketball, there's a lot of times you can come up against a really young team. Kentucky was famous for this, just fielding all freshmen, going up against all seniors.
That's right.
And you can see the difference between, a 22-year-old man and an 18-year-old man.
Exactly right, exactly right. And that's one of the reasons St. Peter's had success, is that they had known each other, they had gelled enough, and you know what? They weren't afraid of the moment. And that's the other thing, too, is that if you get some of these schools, look, there's some of these schools are they get to the tournament and the tournament's too big. But some of them go, you know what? Screw it. We're here. Let's go play some basketball. Let's put up a fight and let's get out of here and let's see if we can pull this off. Maybe we can't. Maybe Baylor is too strong, or maybe whoever they're playing. Right. But again, when you watch the Big East tournament, or you watch the Big 12 tournament, or you watch the ACC tournament, when it gets to the later part, there's always teams that need to make a run. Every one of these tournaments will always be a team that has to do well. They don't necessarily have to win the whole thing, but they better lock it. They better pop off some wins if they want to be amongst their brothers in the conference going to this. But that's not the case this week. That's not the case in a lot of these this week. If you're looking at the OVC championship, there's only going to be one. That's pretty much like one team. That's pretty much going to be it, right? There might be two in some of these, but most of them, like the Northeast Conference Basketball Championship, enjoy it for the sense of urgency that is going to come from these teams where they get to punch their ticket and have an experience for the ages. I think it's the beauty of this tournament. I know there are people who hate this. I get it. Believe me, I understand. Because we hear it every year, right? That this should be the 68 best teams in college basketball, and that is it. That is it. And if you win the Big South tournament and you have a losing record, but you won the Big South tournament, you should be nowhere near this party. Listen, I hear you. But I think there is something that this at least gives every team in college basketball, all 300 plus of them, something to play for if they get into this thing. They give everyone a fighting chance. It doesn't spoil the party. When was the last time you saw St. Peter's in the Final Four? They make a little noise and then they go away.
We talked about Louisville just having a horrific season.
Right.
They could get in the tournament if they got hot at the right time.
You win your thing.
Doubtful.
But you win it, you get in.
Yeah.
And I know people they don't want to see Campbell in the tournament, but believe me, it is fun to watch the faces of these guys in those championship games this weekend or Monday, depending on how they structure it, where they're punching that ticket, they're holding that ticket, and it changes the school and changes these kids for a lot of these kids. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. It's Wake Up Call.